Thank you for that. I bring you cares all the way from the East Coast. I seem to be the only person on the East Coast on the panel, so I'm just going to get into the presentation. I have nothing to disclose. I do want to recognize my collaborating author, the director of the Center for Public Health and Health Policy Research. I do have to warn you, because I'm from New York, I have a tendency to talk a little fast. So slow me down if you need to. I'd like to also give some acknowledgments to CARES, which is our Community Alliance for Research Empowering Social Change, the National Institutes of Health, our CARES Fellows, the Suffolk County Library Cooperative Services. This will all make sense very quickly. And our Suffolk County Minority Health Action Coalition, which we affectionately call SMAC. So the purpose of this presentation is really to describe our academic community framework and the guiding principles necessary to enhance capacity building for social change. I'm also going to describe how it is possible to achieve balance between community-driven agendas and institutional agendas, and just really briefly discuss the lessons learned and the opportunities to empower communities. So let's talk a little bit about Long Island. Challenges and opportunities. How many of you have heard about the Hamptons? All right, we're not from there. So we're from the part that has a lot of residential segregation. What people don't know about Long Island is that it is the third most segregated region in the nation, where our neighborhoods are separated by race. There are differences in social and physical environments that affect health outcomes. And segregation is more than just a physical isolation of people. It's an isolation of opportunities and opportunity structures. And a lot of our minority neighborhoods on Long Island have higher poverty rates, lower incomes, poorer schools, older housing stocks, and lower home ownership rates. In terms of education, although a lot of people do move out to Long Island for this sort of American dream, the majority of Long Island students of color are located in 13 out of 127 of the school districts and attend high poverty schools with inadequate resources. So really quickly, we're just going to go through some of the additional challenges. We know that when funding is limited, there's a perceived tension among communities of color. There is a tendency to have negative perceptions of academic institutions. Our geographic landscape creates sort of a sense of isolation, although we are the suburban sister to New York City. We'd like to give a quick shout out to Carrie Bradshaw from Sex and the City. We, however, have transportation issues, limited access, undocumented residents, uninsured and underinsured population. But more importantly, all of this creates sort of a challenging experience because there is lack of sufficient data to demonstrate that these health inequities actually exist. And we needed to find a way to actually demonstrate the unique needs of our minority and medically underserved communities. So essentially, about 2 months ago, people were going out and lobbying and advocating and trying to really get a lot of policy changes on Long Island, but it's very difficult to do that when you don't have the data to support that those things actually exist. So now I'm going to talk to you a little bit about CHPR. The Center for Public Health and Health Policy Research, where I currently work, very long name, but very simple mission. Our mission is to bridge the gap between community health and public health research. We work collaboratively with community members to develop areas of research, culturally competent strategies, and we believe that it serves a purpose to better understand health issues and concerns through this sort of academic community-based public health partnership. So we have a multifaceted approach. We call this our jelly bean diagram, right? So we have our evidence-based public health, which really helps us to utilize research methods to demonstrate the unique needs of our community, county, and Long Island. We engage in community engagement and coalition building to develop and prioritize an action plan with some long-term sustainable results. And we finally are very interested in developing the infrastructure for community-based participatory research, because we believe no one knows a community better than they know themselves, and we also have expertise that can help them and be used as tools to guide them to address their identified needs. So this is our conceptual framework. We work with a multidisciplinary team, and we wanted to move from anecdotal evidence to evidence-based public health. Sort of the storytelling, which are great when we lobby and we have a lot of community groups advocate, we wanted to sort of arm them with tools. We wanted to give them a skill set so that they can start collecting their own data and really demonstrating what their communities look like and those unique needs. So we started out with the foundation of community engagement and organization, coalition building, and that led us to community-based participatory research, which then arrowed into community assessment, which then led to community health improvement. So let's start talking a little bit about our community engagement. I'm going to briefly talk about this, but I'm not going to spend too much time. We had 3 mini summits. We essentially started in 2007, where we gathered key informants, community members, trusted agents, and we really asked them to tell us what the problems were. We had an idea of what the issues were, but we don't live in those communities, so we wanted them to identify what those areas of concerns were and recommend strategies according to what they felt those strategies should be. In our mini summit number 2, we introduced them to CBPR, and our participants recommended that they wanted to be formally trained in this sort of community-based participatory research. And then on mini summit 3, we actually got seed funding to form our affectionately known SMAC, which is also a Suffolk County Minority Health Action Coalition. So this is actually what took about 2 years to build. This is our Suffolk County Minority Health Summit, where we do this annually, where we really present and sort of spotlight and highlight what are the issues that are impacting our underserved communities on Long Island. So the Suffolk County Minority Action Coalition developed their goals, and they wanted to be a diverse group of action-oriented community members that improved health outcomes, and they also developed 5 active committees that are still existing today. So these are pictures from just our different meetings and the different events that we've had over a period of time. So following the model of really addressing community needs, we founded this alliance. It's called the Community Alliance for Research Empowering Social Change. We just like to call it CARES. It's much shorter, less tongue-tying. It is an academic community-based research partnership that is really designed to improve health outcomes and reduce health disparities among medically underserved communities. So this was a collaboration between CHIPR and Literacy Suffolk, which was really designed to improve research and scientific literacy among community members in our region. And this was sponsored by the National Institute of Health. They had a partnership, Partners in Research grant that we received 2 years of funding for, and the funding was actually really unique. So half the funding went to our community partners, half of the money went to us. So it was sort of this marriage. I'm not married, it was very difficult. So let me talk a little bit about CARES. The goal of CARES essentially was to uniquely get all of these community stakeholders into a community-based research network, enhance their knowledge and understanding of research while building CBPR, developing culturally appropriate interventions, and developing this pool of community-based researchers. So we recruited people through the Minority Health Summit that you saw, through our coalition and some community networks. We hosted 2 orientation sessions where fellows signed informed consents and participant commitment forms. We had 20 Suffolk County libraries to participate at designated sites. So if our community members needed additional resources, they had their own trusted sites within their communities where they would be able to go and do more literature reviews or look up more resources. We also had each training session held at a library. So we had about 19 people sign up for this 15-week training, and these are essentially the demographics. As you can see, we had a predominantly minority cohort, and we actually had 2 Native American participants because we do have 2 Native American reservations. We had a multidisciplinary faculty, and these are essentially where they came from. In the spirit of time, I'm just gonna try to move on to the training and what happened. So we had a 15-week evidence-based public health training. We had really dedicated CARES fellows. There were 11 trainings, 4 experiential workshops, 3 sessions, 3-hour sessions based on a standard MPH curriculum. And all of our fellows had to complete this human subject research certification. This is our syllabus. It's pretty intense, but essentially what we wanted to do was make sure that our CARES fellows felt comfortable enough to work with academic researchers. Our evaluation methods included a baseline assessment at the beginning, a follow-up assessment at the completion of the training. Each training had a pre and post test and an evaluation, and we also did qualitative interviews with the CARES fellows. Some of their responses included that the training sessions were a little intense, but they provided a great deal of information. It helped them to be more critical of issues, and they felt better able to collaborate with academic researchers. In addition to the training, we also had our fellows submit a request for proposal, and they had to essentially give us a project summary, specific aims, research plan, evaluation plan, and performance sites. To date, we have 2 pilot projects that are going on. We have a Latino health initiative that's going into a predominantly Hispanic neighborhood, and they're doing door-to-door surveys. And we have what's called Truth Be Told, which is sort of like a Black woman's Weight Watchers, where they're going to be holding focus groups and developing obesity interventions for predominantly Black neighborhoods on Long Island. So the results are that there was an increase in public health knowledge. They did develop a web-based community health assessment. They completed the training, received their certificates of completion, and the lessons that we learned, clearly that CVPR is challenging and time-consuming, but that more importantly, there needs to be strategic planning, community engagement, and community organization to develop a collaborative network. There has to be consistent presence, mutual benefits, and institutional and faculty buy-in. So we have 7 best practices. I'm going to briefly go through this. It is to create a common language between community members. Make sure that you have community members that are empowered to partner, and you have to utilize CBPR and some type of this type of framework to do that. Faculty should be chosen on their ability to explain complex topics. If you are doing sort of this type of community-based research training or any type of advocacy training, it should be structured. It should be located in a community setting. Fellows had the opportunity to recognize their own knowledge and expertise. And what was key for us was that community engagement by the faculty was a prerequisite for ensuring that community members trusted their academic partners on their grants and on future projects. Thank you.